again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Caller podcast for the 11th day of July 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for pressing play, downloading this, spreading the word, sharing on social media. We're sitting at, last check, 699 starred reviews on iTunes. Who will be number 700? Who will it be, you? And like 189 written reviews on iTunes. So who will be number 200? Inquiring minds want to know. I want to know. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for all of that. Thanks for the word of mouth that you give us. You are our patient zero. You go out there and you infect other people. I don't know why I just thought of you as a disease-carrying person, but that just means that I think of myself as a disease, which is, you know, kind of how I view myself. But I appreciate the hell out of you spreading the word and keep doing it. I love it. I love every minute of it. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Oh, compliments, complaints, all of it. I get all of it, and I read all of it, although not necessarily in a timely fashion. I apologize. I have been very lax this week. I'm just looking forward, like, the next 2 days. Programming note. The next 2 days, I will be guest hosting the Chris Plant Show, which is syndicated from coast to at least middle America. I think it goes all the way across the country, though. I know they're in Chicago. I know Chris is in Chicago. Chris is out of D.C. I've known Chris for a long time. He's a good guy. And so if you're in the D.C. area, if you're in Chicago, somewhere in Tennessee, somewhere in one of the Carolinas, I can't remember where he gets calls from. I've filled in for him before, but I will be on there from 9 a.m. to noon the next 2 days, today and tomorrow. So if you're downloading this at like noon, you already missed day one. Just put it that way. But there's always day two, and you'll get my charm live. You'll be able to call in and complain right to my ears, I guess, not necessarily my face. But it's always fun filling in for Chris Plant. His audience is great, and they love them some Chris Plant. So I'm looking forward to that. We got a lot of stuff to get to, lots of things to talk about. And I think I might employ the Civil War music again, not because of the sad tales of, I remember I used it during the government shutdown for the sad tales of people, you know, the shutdown stories. Oh, it's just so horrible. I might lose my home. Really? You've been out of work for 20 minutes and you're going to get paid retroactively and you're talking about being evicted. I suspect there's more to the story, but there is actually a brewing civil war in the Democratic Party. It's not really amongst the candidates, although the knives are out for Joe Biden. We have some updates on that. They really just don't like Joe Biden. Now that Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren are sort of catching on, and I'd warn against anybody thinking that a candidate catching fire in early July / mid-July is a done deal. Nothing is a done deal. You got 6 months before anybody votes, and who knows how the hell the people of Iowa will vote. It, for the Republicans anyway, it's actually kind of been the kiss of death to win Iowa. If you just look at it historically, I think two people have won Iowa and gone on to win the nomination for the Republican Party. For the Democratic Party, it's slightly better, but not significantly better. And so to try and elevate people before it, you know, 6 months is an incredibly long time. I don't say this in a malicious way, but a lot of people will die in 6 months. With a Democratic field as large as it is, there's a possibility higher than average that one of them could do just that. I'm looking at you, Mike Gravel. I'm just kidding. I got nothing against Mike Gravel except for the fact that he's crazy. But the idea that the media and the left and the Democratic establishment and the progressive whack jobs, they're all positioning themselves to sort of be a kingmaker or queenmaker or somebody who's both. Who the hell knows what's going on in that field? 6 months ahead of time is absurd. But I will tell you this, if they manage to get Joe Biden's fundraising numbers depressed in the next quarter, that is only going to fuel the feeding frenzy. That first debate with Joe Biden, I told you at the time, I thought he seemed out of it. His answers were kind of incoherent and babbling. And not that I've got a lot of room to talk about somebody babbling, but I'm not running for president of the United States. He answered questions that weren't asked. He switched the focus of his vitriol in mid-statement. He just seemed not to be, well, it's a generous assessment to say he wasn't prepared. It's a more realistic assessment to say that he just seemed old and confused sometimes. And politicians, when they get old and they start to get confused, and it'll happen hopefully to all of us, hopefully we all live long enough to become old and confused, they don't actually ever stop and reset. They don't take a second to gather their thoughts because they're absolutely paranoid about being seen as old and confused. So they just keep hammering through and talk and talk and talk until they think they've made a coherent enough point about the subject at hand, or have confused the questioner and the audience enough that they can stop talking, that they're not going to realize that they were just handed a steaming pile of horse crap as an answer. You see it all the time. It's sad. You see it in life, too. That's just kind of how it is. But we'll get to Joe Biden in a second. I want to talk about the brewing feud between Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and the freshman Gang of Four, the Gang of Four out there: Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib. They are all women of color. Now, why do I say that? Because that's all they ever say about themselves. They just can't shut up about the fact that their skin is not white. Nobody gives a damn. Nobody cares. It's 2019, but you would think it was 1955 and they were running in the Jim Crow South. The way they celebrate themselves for something they literally had nothing to do with. Honestly, it's kind of the focus of my town hall column today. But this hadn't happened yet when I'd written that. The left celebrates things that aren't worth celebrating, that aren't worthy of celebrating. What color you are, what gender you are, who you sleep with, those aren't accomplishments. We've been told on the gay thing, some people might say, well, being gay is a choice. Whatever. Just going by what Democrats have said, it's not a choice. So therefore, they're celebrating people for something, again, over which they have zero control. They're celebrating people for existing. And existing is not an accomplishment. I'm sorry for all of you snowflakes out there. But it's not an accomplishment. You actually have to do something. And this was one of the things I wrote about in my book, that we have, one of the most damaging things we've done as a culture is obliterate the line between famous and infamous. There was a time when people wanted to be famous. Nobody wanted to be infamous. People just sort of became infamous. But people aspired to be famous, and to be famous, to achieve fame, you had to do something. You had to accomplish something. Now you don't, because there is no difference between famous and infamous. It's straight up just get attention. It doesn't matter how you get attention. This, I posit in the book, started with Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian. Those are two names that you only know because they had porn tapes, private homemade porn tapes with their boyfriends, leaked or released strategically and disgustingly by family members to make them famous, to get them known. 10 years earlier, if those porn tapes had been leaked, those people would have been embarrassed. They would have kind of gone into hiding. Instead, they both achieved incredible fame and celebrity off of something that should not have been Like, it's a private moment. It's nobody's business. Nobody wants a tape of them having sex out there. You'd be embarrassed by it. But they weren't. They embraced it. And suddenly they became two of the icons of celebrity without any discernible skills. Well, I take that back if you've ever seen the video. There are some skills involved. But not the kind of skills you can really market to get a TV well, maybe when Harvey... whatever, you get my point. So after that, people just said, all I have to do is get attention. And we as a society said, well, we'll watch. What do you got? What are you going to do? And so you have people making viral videos. You have people making complete fools of themselves. Then it became the rise of the YouTube celebrity or the Instagram celebrity. I am an Instagram influencer. What does that mean you do? That means that cosmetic companies pay me a ton of money to put on makeup in front of a mirror, hawk their goods because I have 200,000 followers on Instagram because I'm hot and somebody hopes I'll show my boobs one day. And if the Instagram followers start to drop, they probably will. That's what I mean. You can get attention by doing something, or you can get attention by wandering into an intersection and smearing feces all over yourself and screaming at everybody who goes by. We used to look at that person in the intersection as crazy because they're crazy, but now you don't know if they're crazy. They could just be somebody trying to create a viral video. And we don't judge anymore. We can't judge the difference. We have to celebrate everything. We have to celebrate our diversity. Well, diversity is meaningless. What difference does it make if you have a whole bunch of different flavors of human beings, if they're all the same? If you had a room full of assholes, but they were all different color assholes, would you celebrate that? Is that something worthy of celebration? Well, they're probably all Democrats. But the Democratic Party wants you to celebrate diversity. They want to sort of diminish accomplishment, at least, you know, by people in industries that, you know, make money. You know, the businessman or businesswoman, the person who starts a business and becomes incredibly wealthy, they're the enemy. That's actually an accomplishment, and it's something very few people do. And thank God people do it because they employ people who then have, you know, productive lives and happy lives. But that's who's demonized by the Democratic Party. They don't celebrate the success of companies. They celebrate the success of birth, at least the births that they weren't able to convince people to have an abortion over. But it's insane. And that mentality of celebrate me, I'm special, I'm important, I am significant, I am to be respected, is now being elected to Congress. It's not all millennials by any stretch of the imagination. It's just the loudest millennials. It's a minority of millennials, far too many millennials out there. They are busy working, starting families, getting advanced degrees, doing whatever, living life. But the whiniest, loudest voices in the room are also of that generation. And it would be good if we could celebrate some accomplishments of other people in that generation rather than these four airheads in the Democratic Party. But that's where we are. This all started, as we talked about yesterday, when Nancy Pelosi, in an interview with the New York Times, told Maureen Dowd that she basically undermined and diminished what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her gang of four have done. She said it's basically it's four people. That's how many votes they got. Twitter isn't real life. It doesn't matter how many followers you have. That's not how we govern. Well, that should have been a lesson for these people because it's factually accurate. As much as I disagree with Nancy Pelosi on just about everything, there's no question that that's how Congress works. You have to write legislation, introduce legislation, convince people to support your legislation, hold hearings on that legislation, change your legislation to try and win a majority of voters, and good luck with that. There's a hell of a lot more to passing legislation, but that's the gist of it. The AOC GOF seems to think that all you have to do is tweet about it and it shall become so. Tweeting about it, the symbolism of it. I've gotten 12,000 retweets on this tweet, therefore it is wildly popular, and it must be addressed, and we must stand up to it. That's the mentality that Nancy Pelosi is up to. It's an anathema. Imagine giving your iPhone to your grandparent without any explanation of what it is. You just turn it on, unlock it, say, here you go. Figure it out. It would take a while. They'd have some difficulty with that. That's kind of what Nancy Pelosi is going through, because Nancy Pelosi is a grandmother. Nancy Pelosi lives in an analog world. She lives in the world of government, which all of government is analog. It's just really horrible at changing, at growing, at adapting. It's the lowest bidder. Except for in their congressional offices, they use the oldest technology, so on and so forth. Well, that's not how these young freshman congresswomen come in and expect, and that's not how they live. So when Nancy Pelosi says something mean about them, they're used to hearing mean things from Republicans, and they've always got a "you're a racist" chambered for any time any Republican criticizes them. It's their default setting. Nancy Pelosi has tried to educate these women on how to get things done in Congress. They don't seem interested in doing things that way. They just want what they want, and they want it now. Well, Pelosi seems to be getting full of it. She's had enough. There was an off-the-record meeting with Democrats, a secret private meeting yesterday, where Nancy Pelosi told them, she told everybody to basically keep intra-family squabbles to yourselves. Don't go out there and tweet about it. Don't go out there and whine about it. Do not tell the world. It's basically the Michael Corleone. Don't tell, I guess it was Don Corleone. I don't know. Don't ever talk about the family's business outside of Politico has the story. Speaker Nancy Pelosi chided progressives in a closed-door meeting Wednesday, calling on them to address their intra-party grievances privately rather than blasting their centrist colleagues on Twitter. Pelosi's comments, which were described as stern, came before the first full caucus meeting since a major blow-up over emergency border funding, blah, 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 AOC. Now, this is Nancy Pelosi speaking. I love these closed-door meetings in Washington, D.C. Everybody gets quotes out of it because nobody in D.C. in either party can shut their mouths. Quote, so again, you got a complaint? You come talk to me about it, she says. But do not tweet about our members and expect us to think that is just okay. It makes sense from a strategic standpoint. It makes perfect sense from a political standpoint. AOC has been more than open about the fact that she is supporting and encouraging other whack job, unshowered, granola crunching leftists who love communism to go out there and challenge Democrats she and her other Stalin acolytes have deemed impure. So that's kind of what Nancy Pelosi was talking about. Well, upon this criticism, and upon the criticism in the New York Times about only being four people, AOC has sort of been on a nailing herself to a cross tour. And I don't know who the crossmaker is in D.C., but I imagine with the four of these people, the business is good. It's got to be exponential growth, because I didn't think the cross-making business for nailing yourself to it was super lucrative in Washington, D.C., and now I think it's right up there with a tech startup. It really is. AOC has been talking to the press as well, and she said this, and this is where I'll cue the Civil War music, because this is really kind of where Nancy Pelosi's basically saying, look, we can handle this stuff internally. If you got a problem with another member, don't tell the world because it hurts all of us. And, AOC does what they all do now. She's got a "you're a racist" chamber. She doesn't use that word. She just implies it pretty thoroughly. So here we go. Cue the Civil War music. When these comments first started, I kind of thought that she was keeping the progressive flank at more of an arm's distance in order to protect more moderate members, which I understood. But the persistent singling out, it got to a point where it was just outright disrespectful. The explicit singling out of newly elected women of color. Yeah, that's it, right there at the end. She is making fun of us, not because we're a whole bunch of spoiled babies who are throwing temper tantrums on an hourly basis, but because we're women of color. We're the off-white caucus, shall we say. I love this, first of all. I love it when, and it's a saying I say all the time, and you guys email it to me all the time and email me examples of this all the time, and I appreciate the hell out of it. I might end up using some of these examples in a future book. But I think it's an apt analogy. When Frankenstein's monster comes back and destroys the castle, he always does it. This is the monster that the Democratic Party, through the identity politics, has created. This is what they've unleashed on the world. And while it's out wreaking havoc, and while it has been out wreaking havoc on conservatives and television and talk radio and in print, getting people fired, getting people to lose sponsorships, costing people money and their jobs, and actually harming their fellow Americans, the Democrats sat back home in their castle and they laughed. They smoked their cigars, they drank their brandy or craft beer or craft whiskey or whatever the hell people are drinking these days. And they just laughed hysterically and maniacally at each other. Look at the havoc we have wreaked upon that town down there of Republicans. They're now in disarray. People are being harmed. We've drove this person from the public square and that person from the public square. And it's a wonderful thing. And it is an advancement for our cause. And then when there were fewer things to burn down or the shine wore off and their feigned outrage no longer carried the same weight with advertisers, old advertisers were replaced with new advertisers who'd give the finger to the angry mob, those Frankenstein's monsters were still wandering around down there in the town, but there was nothing left to burn. So they went back to the castle. And they found outrages there, too. The same outrages that they had been programmed to go and seek were now within their own world. And Democrats are facing that wrath. Nancy Pelosi is being called a racist. She's singling out newly elected women of color, according to AOC. And that is just an outrage. You can commit no higher sin in the progressive left than that. And you know, if I had copywritten or trademarked the phrase women of color or people of color, even with if you just put especially in front of it, I could have retired if I got a dollar every time a Democrat said this between now and the election, because every day you see a news story or a clip of somebody saying, well, you know, this is a horrible piece of legislation that will impact people negatively, especially women of color, or especially people of color. The Democratic Party thinks that the black people in this country are complete morons incapable of taking care of themselves. The Democratic Party must do it. It's the most condescending and racist thing you've ever seen, yet the party of anti-racism engages in it on a daily basis. Now, it's not even a circular firing squad that they're forming. Because there is so little damage currently available to be done on the town at the bottom of the hill, they've returned to the castle. This isn't a circular firing squad. This is somebody firing down their own trench. This is pretty mild. What Nancy Pelosi said was pretty mild. It was very mild. She was just pointing out facts. But that AOC is accusing Nancy Pelosi of racism is amping it up a little bit, amping it up a lot of it. And I personally absolutely 100% love it. The Washington Post has the big story. That's where AOC, one of the places AOC went to whine. Their headline, outright disrespectful, colon, four House women struggle as Pelosi isolates them. You would think, you know, a freshman member of Congress would learn how the House works pretty quickly, or even before they come into that House, and would understand the power of the Speaker of the House. But no, they thought they could defeat the Speaker of the House. And much like Cocaine Mitch yesterday, when you go at the Queen, just like the King, you better make sure you don't miss. And they keep missing. They're learning the power of the speakership. Thank you, Quinn, for giving me my glasses repeatedly every time I set them down. Say hello, Quinn.
Say hello.
Yeah?
Truck.
Yeah? Tell them about Mickey Mouse.
I saw Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, kick your mouse. All right. Thank you, Quinn. I got to get back to work. The Washington Post reports House Speaker Nancy Pelosi admonished Democrats for personally attacking one another, warning in a closed-door meeting Wednesday that the party's fracturing was jeopardizing its majority. Without naming names, her target was clear. Four liberal freshmen known as the Squad. Don't you love the way that the media just gives them these lovely names? It's the Squad. They're like a squad of cheerleaders. No, they're the Gang of Four. And all the implications that go along with the Gang of Four name. Well, but the Squad, Rep. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Ian Pressley, is convinced it is Pelosi who is being the bully. Don't you love it? They're the victims. They're always the victims. They are elected to the United States Congress, yet they are nailing themselves to the cross constantly. The four are struggling with the speaker's moves to... yeah, it's poop. You want to say poop again? Say poop.
It's
Say poop. Poop, it's stinky. Stinky.
It's stinky.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I don't know what poop is. I hope you didn't poop. The four are struggling with the speaker's moves to isolate them in recent weeks, according to interviews with the lawmakers, congressional aides, and allies. Pelosi has made at least a half a dozen remarks dismissing the group or their far-left proposals on the environment and health care. More recently, she scorned their lonely opposition to the party's emergency border bill last month. And she defended those comments Wednesday morning, saying, quote, "I have no regrets about anything. Regrets is not what I do." Doubling down on her claim that the group has little power in the House. You really need to double down. Is it a claim? What power do they have in the House? They have no power. They have achieved nothing. Their biggest so-called accomplishment thus far is to introduce a non-binding resolution called the Green New Deal that every member of the United States Senate voted against. Even the Democrats who claim to support it. Hell, even the Democrat who introduced it in the United States Senate voted against it. But the claims they have little power. Ocasio-Cortez told the Washington Post, quote, "When these comments first started, I kind of thought she was keeping the progressive flank more at an arm's distance in order to protect it, blah, 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 especially the women of color." The quote I already told you. The four women are trying to figure out how to respond, texting one another. Oh, God, they're conspiring together. I love that. It's not often that you add more people to a group and the collective IQ goes down. But when you get these four together, we're looking at negative numbers. Forrest Gump is looking like Stephen Hawking. The four women are trying to figure out how to respond, texting one another and weighing whether to confront Pelosi to ask her to stop. "Please stop bullying us, Nancy Pelosi. You're so mean." By pointing out that we're worthless and we have no power and we don't know how this austere body works. Quit, please quit. But for now, they are focused on their congressional duties, even as they defend their votes in the House that have drawn Pelosi's ire. Oh, It goes on from there. There's no point in reading further. You get the gist of it. You can almost hear, faintly in the distance, them nailing themselves to that cross. This is the modern left. It's sickening and frightening to me that people like this can be elected to Congress. People with this mentality and these ideas can be elected to Congress from anywhere but Vermont. But the fact that they are being lionized and they are now attacking from within, firing down their own trench, cracks me up to no end. They thought, the left thought, the Democrats thought, we've got this headache to give to the Republicans, and it is boomeranged back on them big time. Nancy Pelosi knows that to cave to these four squeaky, whiny little brat wheels will damage the party in the next election. She also knows that they won't shut up because they have what is the most dangerous combination of things a human being can have. Absolute arrogance in their ignorance. They have been shown to be wrong so often, and everything they say, they cannot admit that they're wrong, however. They just can't. When AOC says that the unemployment rate is so low because people are working multiple jobs, that was so on its face stupid. Her response was not to say, yeah, you know what, I misspoke, it happened, sorry about that. It was to say, people are picking on me because I am a minority woman. I am a woman of color. And so on down the line. Ilhan Omar, anti-Semitic remark after anti-Semitic remark. And her response is not, boy, I really got to reassess what I've learned as a person because it turns out I've been told a lot of anti-Semitic crap. I should probably reevaluate my circle of friends and confidants. No, it was to say that she was being singled out because she is a Muslim woman of color. They are a one-trick pony. But that pony's got a lot of buck in it still, and now it's returned to the Democrats' house, and it's kicking over all the china, and I'm loving it. Absolutely loving it. Before we move on to crazy, sniffy Uncle Joe, I want to stick in the crazy, just crazy department. Maybe not the losing it department. Bernie Sanders. It's amazing to me. CNN had a big story yesterday about how Democrats are scrambling to win the AOC primary. I don't know what, in the Democratic primary, I suppose that will matter. She's a bit of a rock star amongst people who don't know anything, really. So that's a big constituency in the Democratic Party, and if you can win that over, you stand a better chance of winning in the primary. So Joe Biden is not in that hunt, but Kamala Harris has now thrown her hat into that ring. They're co-sponsoring together a bill trying to find housing and help former convicts, felons, with housing, which maybe it'll help fight recidivism. I don't know. But, you know, with both of them being for one from California, one from New York, both of those places have pretty significant homeless problems that aren't convicted felons. You'd think that might be a bigger priority, but maybe not. Who knows? Well, anyway, back to Bernie. Bernie is still very much desperate for the AOC endorsement. If you remember during the 2018 campaign, Bernie barnstormed for progressives across the country, left-wing loons in House races, to try and get them elected, and he did so with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That didn't work out. Most of them lost, and lost pretty badly, but they were tight. They were thick as thieves, as they say. Well, that made everybody think that Bernie, you know, he's a natural choice for AOC. But that's not, you know, Bernie's an old white guy, and AOC can't just endorse an old white guy, at least not without trying out some of the other options in the Democratic field, and she's mostly been flirting with Elizabeth Warren. Well, Bernie is desperate for that constituency, because Bernie's only getting about half of the Bernie supporters from 2016. See, here's Bernie Sanders' biggest problem. In 2016, he was the alternative to Hillary Clinton. They were very different on the policy issues. She wanted to turn the lunacy up to about 5 to 7 on most issues, whereas Bernie wanted to turn it up to 11. So there was a real choice there. He was the radical, progressive, left-wing socialist. This time, Bernie Sanders is not unique in the field by any stretch of the imagination. It's a testament to the power and influence he has in the Democratic Party, a party to which he does not belong, by the way. He's still an independent. But everybody in the field, to one degree or another, has adopted all of his policies. So you no longer have to go with the crazy, wild-haired, old white guy who looks like he slept in his suit in a bag of potato chips to get your socialist fix on. You can go with anybody in the field, and that has hurt Bernie significantly. He's not unique anymore. Well, he's trying desperately to win back that street cred of being the craziest SOB on the block. So he, along with AOC, has introduced a resolution about the most important issue of our time. And I'm speaking, of course, about climate change. It will kill us all. We're coming up on, 11 and a half years, almost just 11 years left before we're all dead. So I hope that you've got a time capsule going. I assume that there are some scientists out there building spaceships to send their little Clark Kents off, or Kal-Els, I suppose, off to another planet in the distance because nobody will heed their warnings. Well, Bernie released a video yesterday on social media explaining this, and the whole thing is a damn joke. I'll play it for you and see if you can figure it out, and I'll come back and tell you why this and the Green New Deal and pretty much everything is just a damn joke. Here's Bernie.
This morning I introduced legislation in the Senate declaring that climate change is a national emergency. Similar legislation was introduced in the House by Representative Blumhauer and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Anybody who does not appreciate that climate change is a not only national emergency, but a global emergency really does not understand what's going on. And what the scientific community has told us is that we have all of 12 years in order to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy, or there will be irreparable damage done to this planet. Our job right now is to have the courage to take on the fossil fuel industry, who make billions and billions of dollars every single year destroying our planet. To take them on, and in fact to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. This is a national emergency. The future of the planet is hanging on our decision about moving forward. Let's go forward together. Thank you.
Let's go forward together. This is a national emergency. This is a planetary emergency. You're all going to be dead. What are you doing sitting around not crying about this? Vote for me. I've introduced this. Don't you love it? I've introduced this resolution in the Senate, along with in the House from Blumenauer and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Does he not know how to pronounce her name? Ocasio-Cortez. What's interesting about this, and what lets you know that they're not telling you the truth about this crap, is it's a resolution declaring this to be an emergency. It is not a piece of legislation. The House of Representatives and the United States Senate routinely pass resolutions that mean absolutely nothing. We declare this day to be Thursday the 14th, the best day ever, and henceforth, forevermore, it shall be known as the best day ever. The Green New Deal was also a non-binding resolution. It meant nothing. It's just a whack job outline of fever dreams about filtering cow farts and making people take trains and apparently rowing to other countries around the world because it wants to get rid of airplane travel and cars. if this is such the national emergency and planetary emergency that Bernie is talking about, where's the legislation? Why haven't these people introduced legislation? AOC has been in Congress for 6 months. She's had a staff that entire time. If this is the most pressing issue of our time and of all time, they've had plenty of time to draft legislation, to put the Green New Deal into legislative form and submit it to a committee, ask for it to be scored by the Congressional Budget Office, find out how much it will cost, not that they will care, and the impact on employment and life in general. Of course, the CBO will be way undercut, but it'll still be a gigantic number. But if it's such a damned important issue, why haven't they done anything about it? Where are they? Where are the pieces of legislation? There's a lot of talk, which is a lot of hot air, and judging by Bernie's age and what I can only assume is his diet, there's a lot of methane being released. But there's no action on what they insist is the most important pressing issue human beings have ever faced in the history of human beings existing on this planet. Kind of weird, isn't it? They all have the ability to introduce legislation, to draft legislation, yet nobody's doing it. Yet they're telling you, this is a campaign issue. This is just like immigration, you know, for decades, Democrats. We must do something, a path to citizenship. It's the most important thing. These poor, sweet, nourishing, illegal aliens need to be brought out from the shadow. It's not fair that they're in the shadows. We must have them be full citizens. When they had absolute control of government and could have passed anything they wanted, they didn't even try to move on immigration. Why? Because if they did, they wouldn't be able to run on immigration. It's that simple. I realize that sounds cynical, but cynicism is realism in a lot of cases, and this happens to be one of those cases. The videos, Bernie sort of meandering down the street talking about how important this is. Well, Bernie, you've been in the Senate for a while. You've been in the Congress for much longer. Where's your bill? Where's your bill? If you have an old bill, dust it off and reintroduce it. AOC, you've been there for a while. This is the most pressing, important issue anybody has ever dealt with. Where's your bill? What, can we wait another year? Can we wait another 6 months? They tell us we can't wait at all. We must act, and by act, they mean elect Democrats. But shouldn't those Democrats, if they really believe that we can't wait to act, shouldn't they be acting now, not acting for the 2020 elections? Just something to think about that I found a little bit curious, and I thought you might too. Speaking of curious, the case of crazy, sniffy, gropey, creepy Uncle Joe Biden. Oh, yes. He is the Democratic front runner for now, which is kind of like leading the first mile of a marathon, but he gets all the money and the attention and everything that goes along with that. And with that, of course, with him being a straight white male and old, that's not what the Democratic establishment or the progressive wing of the party necessarily wants. Actually, not even necessarily. It's not what they want. Well, I told you yesterday about how the Washington Post had a piece talking about how Joe Biden, he says, "Come on, man," and that's gendered language. And it's just not right, and it's horrible, and it's awful, and it's sexist, and they shouldn't do it. And we should stamp out that phrase, just like mankind should be, it should be personkind, and manhole cover should be personhole cover, and mailman should be non-gendered person, whatever, who knows. But doing the Lord's work, as he often does over at the Washington Free Beacon, David Rutz combed through some of Joe Biden's interviews and speeches and found, this is just a quick montage, I just want to use it to illustrate the story from yesterday about Biden's using "come on, man." He put together a nice little greatest hits of Joe Biden saying "come on, man," that horrible sexist that he is.
Everybody knows who this guy is. Come on, man. Come on. China is going to eat our lunch. Come on, man.
In the late 80s, about how Japan was going to eat our lunch.
Come on, man.
My heart breaks. Come on, man.
5% tax on the first dollar after the first million you made. Come on, man.
Who is 68 years old to go get an ID card to be able to vote. Come on, man.
Look, he's going to be 75 years old. Come on, man.
They're all going to end up voting for Hillary. Come on, man.
How do we deal with stateless actors without allies? Come on, man.
In 30 seconds?
Hey,
come on,
what happens?
Man.
Is what they do worthwhile? Come on, man.
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 No, I'm serious. I'm being deadly earnest.
Come on, man. I'm being deadly earnest. Come on, man. What you doing, man? Well, you thought that was pretty bad. Today, the New York Times decided to take a swipe at him. Columnist Frank Bruni, I don't know how you pronounce his name. I don't care how you pronounce his name. He has a piece that is another stab in the heart of the zombie Joe Biden. It's a matter of whether or not the media and the progressives can kill Joe Biden's candidacy before he limps into victory, into the nomination. The column is entitled Joe Biden, Closet Republican. Now, in 2018, 2019, 2020, that is not what you want to be as a liberal Democrat, as a Democrat at all. You want to pretend to be the wokest of the woke. You want to pretend that your tramp stamp is a Barack and Michelle Obama and the Constitution being set on fire. But for the pages of the New York Times, even the opinion pages, to call Joe Biden a closet Republican is rather shocking. He compares him to George W. Bush, takes some swipes at George W. Bush, saying that his record of public service was insignificant, compared to Joe Biden's 35 years or whatever in the United States Senate. Well, George W. Bush served in the military, he was governor of Texas, and he actually held a job in the private sector, which is something that Joe Biden never did. Democrats frown upon real-world experience because so many of their heroes never had any of it. That's beside the point. And talking about Biden, he writes, Biden's core promise is to end the much greater melodrama and expunge the infinitely darker shame of Donald Trump's presidency, also by returning to what preceded it, Barack Obama's administration. Obviously, there are big glaring differences between Biden and Bush, not just ideologically, the public service, but Biden isn't exactly campaigning on his 3.5 decades in the Senate. Not when you consider all the chapters. And this is, again, little teeny cuts. They're trying to kill Biden, death by 1,000 cuts. They say his fury over busing, which is a position currently held by Kamala Harris. Oops. His treatment of Anita Hill. He didn't mistreat Anita Hill. He just didn't bludgeon Clarence Thomas with a complete lack of evidence and a farcical set of allegations. But in modern Democratic Party circles, that is the same as sexually assaulting Anita Hill herself. The crime bill. Remember, Joe Biden used to campaign and used to brag about, I passed the crime bill. That got the gun ban. It did this, that, and the other. It was wonderful. Now Democrats say that is mass incarceration in legal form. It's an outrage. It's racist. It's everything that we hate now. It helped Democrats back in the day. Now it's an albatross because the Democratic Party has gone absolutely insane. And he lists the invasion of Iraq, which he wishes voters wouldn't dwell on. No, Biden isn't campaigning on his 8 years as vice president. He's also campaigning on the nostalgia of his surname, the familiarity of his presence, and the comfort of his aura. And that's not just a tactic from the Bush playbook. It's a quintessentially Republican move. It is not, but liberals are not bound to reality. The hit piece concludes this way. the last two Democrats to win the presidency, Clinton and Obama, didn't take a tact anything like Biden's. Clinton was the man from Hope, Arkansas, who was determined to give liberalism a modern makeover and set the Democratic Party on a more profitable course. Obama was hope and change, not to mention the audacity of hope. And those nouns in aggregate argue a fresh start. This is where they twist the knife. This is where they really blast. Well, they. I'm saying they. It's Frank Bruni. Where he really blasts Joe Biden. Biden, in contrast, is trying to get Democrats to do something that Republicans have more practice at. Choose a nominee who's due over one who's new. He's the liberal iteration of Bob Dole. The looser version of Mitt Romney. John McCain without Lindsey Graham glued to his side. Oh, man. He's really got to have a really vitriolic hatred of Joe Biden to write that. The liberal iteration of Bob Dole. He has his raft of policy positions, many of them echoes or adaptations of Obama's, but they're not what his supporters think of first. They're not what he thinks of first either. One more time during the same 30-second span, Biden said, quote, "People know who I am." That's the message. It might as well be the bumper sticker. At most other junctures, it would be fatally underwhelming. At this one, there's no telling. He's essentially saying Joe Biden is running for president because he's got nothing better to do, which is probably true, and he thinks he deserves to win because it's his time. There is this sort of tendency in Republican circles, at least in recent times, to nominate the person who's just kind of next. Bob Dole in 1988 lost to George H.W. Bush, so when the next time it came up that there was an open non-incumbent year for a Republican, Republicans nominated Bob Dole. George W. Bush in 2000 beat John McCain, so in 2008 there was a sense, oh, it's John McCain's turn. And so they nominated him. The same thing with Mitt Romney. He came in second to John McCain. Republicans, it's not a long time history, but there is this recent history of Republicans doing just that. Democrats haven't. Democrats kind of go for whatever is out there, whatever they think can win in the past. Now this year might be a little bit different for them. They desperately want to win. Then that is Joe Biden's argument, and the polling data at this point says Joe Biden beats Donald Trump. But Joe Biden isn't one of them. He isn't one of the base of the party. Not anymore. He might have never have been. Who knows? I mean, the guy was elected to the Senate when he was 29. He had to be sworn in later than Inauguration Day for everybody else because he was constitutionally too young to hold the job. He's never, as far as I know, worked in the private sector outside of like odd jobs here and there. So he's not new. He's not fresh. He doesn't have any original ideas. He's inclined to socialism, but you get the sense that he's inclined to socialism because the party wants socialism. So he's embraced it to the extent that he's had to so that he can sort of check that box and say, I've embraced socialism. Yay, socialism. But he's certainly not got his heart in it. We'll see what daggers get stuck in Joe Biden over the coming weeks. But it's kind of interesting to watch the New York Times, a vaunted columnist for the New York Times, write something that compares Joe Biden to Bob Dole, John McCain, and Mitt Romney. And there's no outrage over that, by the way. There's no real upset. So that lets you know where the media is and where a huge percentage, let's be honest, Joe Biden's pulling between 25 and 32%, depending on the poll. That, in a field of 24, puts you easily in front-runner status, but it doesn't bode well for a weeding of the herd, shall we say. People who drop out, not that, when Eric Swalwell dropped out, his one voter probably just gave up and called it quits. But when people with 2 and 3 and 5% of the vote start to drop out in a few months, where will those voters go? The thing Joe Biden has going for him that put him in the lead is that everybody knows who Joe Biden is, pretty much 100% name recognition. The thing that Joe Biden has against him when people start dropping out is everybody knows who Joe Biden is. They all know his name. They all know his record. And they actively chose somebody else over him. When that choice goes away, will he be their second choice, or will they still have that idea that I want to go with something new, someone new? We'll see. The media sure as hell seems to be making it a push for them not to go to Joe. All right, last couple of stories before I head off to bed to get up early in the morning to do 3 hours of radio. And if you listen to the radio, I hope you listen to the radio, but there will be a lot of repeats because there's not going to be a whole lot of news made between 2 a.m. and 9 a.m. I hope, because if there is, it's going to be something terrible. But you should listen anyway. This story kind of cracks me up, especially with the so-called controversy surrounding the Women's World Cup and their antics. You can burn the American flag, you can disrespect the American flag and be treated as an American hero, but if you burn or desecrate the pride flag, the gay pride flag, well, that's a hate crime. ABC News, suspect arrested in New York City pride flag burning outside of gay bar. Ooh, dun dun dun. Police say they apprehended a suspect on Tuesday evening who allegedly set fire to a rainbow flag outside of a Harlem gay bar. NYPD Chief of Detectives Dermont Shea said the officers made the arrest thanks to tips from the community. The arrest came just a day after New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said he asked the state authorities to open a hate crimes investigation over the incident. Outside of Alibi Lounge, the only gay bar in the neighborhood around 139th Street and Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Boulevard. Quote, said the governor, "This act of hate is repugnant. Our values of equality and inclusion, and we will not stand by and allow these cowardly acts to continue in New York. I am once again directing the State Police Hate Crimes Unit to assist the NYPD with its investigation and hold those responsible to the fullest extent of the law." It's weird how burning an American flag is absolutely 100% protected speech, but burning a gay pride flag? Ooh, no, that's a hate crime. Can't do that. How does that work out exactly? I don't support the idea of criminalizing flag burning. I support the idea of shunning people who burn flags, and I want nothing to do with them. But that's what you have to put up with in a free society. But in a free society, you should be able to burn whatever you want as long as you own it and it's not hurting anybody. A pride flag is no more special than anything else, no more special than a t-shirt. An American flag is more special, but Americans aren't really a favored group in this country anymore with the media and with the Democratic Party power structure, whereas the LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ community most assuredly is, and so they must be pandered to, and New York is more than happy to do it. Finally today, a reminder that animals are great. I have animals. I have 3 cats. We don't have a dog right now, but someday we'll probably have a dog as well. But don't get too many. Don't get too many. This story is rather disturbing and mildly creepy and a bit amusing. It's out of Dallas. A missing persons investigation in Johnson County has ended with the revelation that a 57-year-old man was completely eaten by his dogs. Sheriff deputies called to a trailer home near Venus, Texas on May 6th to perform a welfare check. Once there, their relatives told officials that a reclusive family member, Freddie Mac, hadn't been seen or heard from since April 19th. So they looked around, didn't see anything except for some dogs that were pretty aggressive. Then they came back a few days later, still aggressive dogs, no sign of the man. Then they noticed some shirts. Apparently this guy only had one outfit that he ever wore, which is kind of another telltale sign. He had 18 dogs, by the way, I should mention. Then they found in the dog's feces, after a search warrant, fragments of his one outfit and of human bones. The dogs had apparently eaten him completely. Whether or not they killed him and ate him, or he had died, he had a medical condition, an undisclosed, undescribed medical condition, that he died and out of starvation, they ate him, we don't know. And I'm not sure we want to know. It's a disturbing story. And I find most disturbingly that the dogs were all put down on the off chance that they killed the guy. So, yeah, don't get too many dogs. You never want to be that outnumbered by your animals. You should always have more humans than animals. Your life will be better, and there will be a significantly, well, at least slightly, less chance that you'll be eaten. That is, on that charming note, all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Please keep telling a friend. Every day, just tell three people, and I will be ecstatic. Subscribe on iTunes. Rate and review on iTunes if you have the time and if you're so inclined. And be back here tomorrow for another exciting the Friday edition of the Daily Daily. It's Friday already, ladies and gentlemen. Friday tomorrow.
Come on, man.